We all know your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like notes and billing, or simply trying to make a cup of coffee, or even run to the bathroom in between appointments, constant interruptions can derail your day. This podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist for iPad, a digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients can securely check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from interruptions and make the most of your time. I've been using them for almost 3 years now, and it saves me hours in my week. Start a 14-day free trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up. Hey everyone, welcome back to the All Things Private Practice podcast. Today I'm joined by Dr. Natalie Edmond, who is a licensed clinical psychologist, mindfulness and yoga teacher, with over 20 years of experience as a trauma therapist integrating mind, body, and spirit. She has led hundreds of hours of racial literacy and anti-racism workshops. She believes that racial justice is a spiritual practice. She's been the director of a women's trauma program, co-host of Rest and Awaken podcast, adjunct faculty, and a Jedi justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion consultant. She facilitates anti-racism, stumbling over my words already. She facilitates anti-racism revolution and online membership community where aspiring anti-racists continue to explore themselves as racial beings and work towards collective liberation. Director of Villanova University's Counseling Center, the owner of a group practice called Mindful and Multicultural Counseling, and you just became a published author. So congratulations on that as well. Excited to have you here. I know before we were talking, like, what are we going to talk about today? Which is basically my process for everyone who comes on here, and we kind of see where it goes. And I know you published this book. I've been in contact with you. I know you did some trainings for my group practice here in North Carolina. I know you through some mutual friends. I think you're an amazing human. You bring so much to the table in terms of authenticity, vulnerability, having hard conversations for a lot of people. And I just want to give you a big shout out for publishing your book, Mindful Race Talk, which is a huge accomplishment just to publish anything and get it out into the world. I think there's vulnerability to that, but there's also got to be such like this beautiful creation process that happens as well. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I definitely didn't think writing a book or publishing a book would be on my bucket list of things to do. So it's been an amazing journey. Highly recommended for anybody who has, you know, something they want to share with the world. I know for me, it was really, how do I get more people to have the skills necessary to have the conversations, knowing that, you know, many of them will never encounter me, never come to a workshop. And yet feeling like in the times we're living in, we just need more resources to be able to have the hard conversations.
I think that's really well said. And just having that resource readily available, because you're right. A lot of people who might encounter your book may never actually have direct interaction with you or hire you for whatever reason. So having that be a really accessible resource that is really tangible, and also it allows for you to create this bigger reach, right? Like it allows you to kind of have a more of a ripple effect than simply just sticking to consultation or workshop or training.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, the hardest part of the book for me was because I do so many workshops is like, how do I capture the way that I am in a workshop? How do I capture that essence in a book? Because I didn't want it to be fully academic. I wanted it to be relational, to be embodied. Yep. Like, how do you do mindfulness from a book? How do you, you know, how do you encourage book clubs and teams to like really like make this part of like who you are?
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to think about like when people were editing the book, like how do you edit it in a way where it still sounds like me?
Exactly.
Right? Which might not be kind of like a Eurocentric, you know, typical language, because I don't always talk in that way. And so it's so interesting to go through that whole process.
Yeah, I'm glad you named that, because so let me ask you, let me back up a little bit. Was the book, did you go through traditional publishing, hybrid, or self-publishing?
I went through self-publishing mainly because I wanted to get it out before the election because I felt like if I went through the traditional route, it probably wouldn't come out to like next year sometime. And I thought, oh my goodness, the world needs these tools now.
Now, I that's so insightful. And just like really ensuring that you wanted to get this out in the hands of people while a very polarizing experience just went down and is going to continue to for the next however many years here. And I think there's a lot of vulnerability in book writing, right? Like editing is, I'm going through a traditional publishing process right now, and talk about things being picked apart to the point where like your insecurities and imposter syndrome and whatever just comes out where you're like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. It's almost where I've been at. But I think getting that message out into the world feels more important to me than how I feel about the process emotionally, which is a weird mind fuck.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I know that I had friends and people in my membership community read early drafts. And you need some, some grit in order to tolerate some of that feedback. Because it's so interesting, because the people I had do the initial read were people who had been through workshops with me before. And so the feedback was so interesting that they said my first draft felt more guarded than I usually present in workshops. And that was really helpful for me to think through, like, you tried to do a vulnerable book, but then you retreated in the process of writing it. And that as they kept reading the book, that I got more vulnerable over time. So then I had to go back and say, okay, like, what are the ways in which you were basically like bringing your academic version of yourself when that's not the kind of book you wanted?
Absolutely. That is a really nuanced and complicated way to revise and edit. And I think for, like you said, grit, I was thinking this whole time, like, I really need calloused, like, thick skin. I would give it to people in my circle and they would read it. And I would have to almost immediately say, I don't want edit suggestions about grammar or formatting. I just want to know if it is engaging. I want to know if the content is valuable. Oh, okay. Because they had some people took like laundry lists of notes, and I was like, I don't want any of this shit.
I wish I had known that at the beginning, because at some point I had to be like, Dad, no, I'll take like 20% of your grammar stuff, and then the rest I don't really need.
So, throughout this process, have you noticed a shift or a change in anything in your creative process or how you've kind of shown up? I feel like you're very authentic and genuine and open, so I can't imagine much has shifted since publishing.
Well, it's interesting because in workshops, you try to create the sense of psychological safety, and then and your body is there, so people can like read the nonverbals, they can read your energy. But in a book, right, it's like this is out there in the world, and even recording the audiobook, like that was really weird. By that time I was so done with the book, I was like, I cannot listen or read like this one more time. But listening to like even recording it, I was like, how proper do I want this to be? Right. Because sometimes I stumble across my words. Right. And so do I edit that? Do I work for perfection, or do I'm like, okay, it's like good enough. So even like working through like some of that stuff, but it's so, it's really gratifying to know that something is out there. So when people are saying like, what's a good resource? I actually have something I can physically give them, because so many books around race, I feel, either cater to a white audience. Yep. And I think everybody needs to do work around racism, not just white people. And I think that balancing compassion and accountability, a lot of books are kind of in your face or too soft, and like what's the dance in between. And so I'm hoping like that's how it lands with people.
I like that you said that, like the dance in between, to have that almost middle ground to make it as like digestible and approachable to basically be all encompassing, right? Instead of just saying like people are either going to read this and feel like, oh, this is really in my face, this makes me uncomfortable, which probably needs to happen to some degree. Right. But also, how do we pull that back and really soften things too, to get the message across in a way where someone's going to come away and actually really think about it, digest it, and then start to incorporate it into their daily life.
Okay. Yeah. And I love that, regardless of how people voted for the presidential election, I love that there were resources in the book about how do we cultivate curiosity for people who vote differently than you or who are very passionate about topics that are very different from you. And how do you notice how you get triggered, right? And all the different intersecting oppressions, like how do we become aware of that and bring that into the conversation? Because if we all just keep to our silos, it's not going to bring healing to the world. It's not going to build bridges.
No. I feel like there's so much division as there is already. And then when you add in like social media into the mix where it is either an echo chamber, or it's just like you can be attacked pretty openly with just one comment. So having that mindful discussion, because I think what you just said is so important, the curiosity component, how it seems like we typically, well, I don't want to overgeneralize. It feels like there's a lot of society that doesn't have access to that curiosity a lot of the time, at least on social media spaces. I don't know. In person, I think it's different when you're able to have a conversation, read body language, read like context cues. Social media can become, honestly, like a bloodbath.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, we were talking right before we started about my recent kind of backlash that I experienced where I had to really use all the resources in my book as a way to say, like, how do we, if we do harm in some way or someone just strongly disagrees with something you said or takes it out of context, right? Particularly on social media where it can be so brutal, where we can easily dehumanize each other. Like, what's a way? I think so much about abolition or just like, how do I put into practice trying not to dehumanize people, even if I feel like they're dehumanizing me? And that's the practice. That's the work.
Yeah. No, I mean, that I'm glad you named that. And I think like, I give you a lot of empathy for that experience because I would have had a hard time in that space. You know, like my RSD gets triggered when stuff starts getting picked apart or comments become hurtful or hateful. And my instinct in a lot of situations is like, how do I turn comments off? How do I back away? How do I just not even pay attention to this? And I don't think that's always the appropriate direction, especially as someone with a following to like to go into that mode. But sometimes it does become like, how do I protect my mental health at all costs in this scenario that was not intended to go in this direction?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And thinking about for me, I definitely turned comments off. Like I had to ask my teenagers, like, how do you turn comments off over here? Cause I'm like, you know, not used to all this attention. But like finding that balance between like taking care of oneself, but then also over the last month, noticing how overstimulated I was and like all the ways in which I needed to dial things down. Because like, yeah, I mean, even like I have my own like rejection sensitivity that I like work through, which I think for me, like in publishing a book, right, is like navigating like, okay, this work is out there. So people could write reviews and comments and do. And so like, how do I like not take that personally, but also it's also like, this is like my life's work here in this book. Right. And so I'm going to take it personally, even though I know it's not about me.
And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Alma. When I first decided to go in network with insurance, I found the whole process overwhelming. I can actually remember a couple of days that made me want to cry, where I spent hours on the phone being transferred or hung up on or not given clear answers or instructions. I knew I needed to get paid, and I also knew that I didn't know if I could do this by myself. If you're running into those same challenges, Alma can help. They made it easy to get credentialed a lot faster, handled all of the paperwork, and offered way better rates than I could have gotten on my own. They also make sure I get reimbursed within 2 weeks of every session so that I know when I'm getting paid. Visit helloalma.com/ATPP to learn more. That's helloalma.com/ATPP. Hey everyone, it's Patrick with All Things Private Practice, and I just want to invite you to join us in Scotland for our second Doubt Yourself, Do It Anyway Summit. That's happening July 14th to the 17th of 2025. We have 12 amazing speakers, 12 MBC CEs available in Edinburgh, Scotland, which is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. The link is in my show notes and on my website at allthingspractice.com. You can also join us in Greece in September if you're a leader or wanting to start a group practice. We have a leadership retreat happening on the island of Crete from September 6th to the 11th. Honestly, one of the most beautiful villages I've ever been to in Hania. And then in 2026, we have limited spots available in two different New Zealand retreats. One is for neurodivergent entrepreneurs, March 1st to the 8th of 2026. And then beyond private practice, moving beyond one-on-one therapy, creating alternative streams of income. That's March 15th to the 22nd, 2026 in Queenstown, New Zealand. Check the links. Got yourself. Do it anyway. That just hit hard. Yeah. How do I take it personally when this is my life's work, right? And really, you can do every exercise and strategy under the sun, and it's still when we create something this vulnerable and we put it out into the world, it's still going to like sting a little bit, even if it's just like completely out of context, right? Like, I think review culture is hilarious to me because it's ridiculous that you can just say anything at any time. Mm-hmm. I was just in Spain and my friend owns a local Spanish Andalusian shop and she doesn't speak a lot of English. And some of the reviews are like, great shop, but the owner doesn't speak English. So it was like one star. I'm like, what the fuck is this? This is ridiculous. You're also in a different country. So I think having like your work out into the world, there is that extra layer of vulnerability and that comes with a lot of discomfort at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think reminding myself that there are always going to be haters and that the work is supposed to, at least my work around racism and anti-racism is supposed to be agitating a bit. And so, it's so interesting that so many Black women in the last month when I said, I did this presentation and I got a lot of praise and I got, a lot of hate. They were like, good work. Right. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I hear you, but like, it's hard to feel it in the moment, but so it's so interesting. And other people are like, oh, you went too far. And other people are like, good work. And so it's like, which one is accurate? I don't know.
Yeah. God, that is really tough to wrestle with. That's so nuanced and complex because I imagine you to some degree are like seeing all sides of it. Right. But you're also the person who's like under the microscope. So then it's like, okay, I understand the sides, but I'm also caught in the middle of it and I don't know how to necessarily get out from under it.
Yeah. And I think I was just reflecting with some friends last week about that's actually the destabilizing part of it is being able to hold the multiple truths. Like it would be easier if I was just binary, right? If I just was like, this is the way it is and everything else is white noise.
Yep.
But because I try to honor so many different truths, that feels harder to live in because it's so messy.
Yeah. Well, I give you a ton of credit for not only going through the experience and handling it the way you did, talking about it publicly right now, moving through it. So it sounds like, I mean, just reading your book title in the back, Mindful Race Talk, it sounds like embodiment of that exact title.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that if you are committed to any kind of anti-oppression work, there's going to be pushback from the people who don't want change to happen, right? That they, for whatever reason, don't want everyone to have equal rights, or they don't want some people to have this, the whatever affirms them, whatever helps them thrive. And that, that's the work, right? Is how do we build the calluses? How do we build the resources to ride the waves of people not liking you or people hating you or people strongly disagreeing with you, but living in accordance to your values.
I love that. Yeah. I think that is for so many people really difficult to access at times. And I think that encapsulates it beautifully of like having to live with the both ands and staying anchored into your values. And that allows you to constantly kind of circle back when things get messy to be like, but I'm staying really consistent to who I am and what I believe in. And I think that's really brave and beautiful.
Yeah.
I also love your cover art, by the way. I'm like looking at it out of my peripheral and I really like that cover art. So well done on that.
Oh, thank you. Have you heard the story that that wasn't the original cover?
No.
That I was working with the graphic designer. Like, I try to support, you know, minority owned businesses, and she ghosted me. She gave me like a cover and then she ghosted me. And I was like, oh crap. Like, this book is supposed to come out in a month and I have to start over. But it all worked out. I found a new graphic designer and like, she really worked with me to make it even better than the original art was. So
this is a good pivot for a second of like, for those of you who are listening, who want to self-publish, and I'm sure a lot of you do, because I think everyone has a book inside of them and a message to get out. How challenging did you find the self-publishing route to be? How much of it did you actually like handle on your own?
Yeah, I would say I thought the writing of the book would be the hardest, but it was actually the last month that was the hardest. Like, yeah. Once like it was done with editing, but it was the graphic art and then like all the different requirements for the audiobook and the different like PDFs and all of that stuff. And then I would say like, I'm someone who doesn't love marketing. So then like all the ways to like put it out there. I mean, I feel like that last month, that September, oh my God, I felt like every day there was a new obstacle.
Right.
And it was just me, myself, and I to deal with the new obstacle. So while I felt like I had lots of independence and I could do it the way I wanted to, it definitely felt like, oh my goodness, like talk about calluses and grits and like, okay, let's push through here. I wish people had told me like, that's the worst part. So now when I have friends publishing, I say like, this is the worst part. Like, just know, like build in extra time. This is the worst part.
I appreciate hearing that. And for a lot of you listening, you're probably like, ooh, that feels like a relief to know that. So funny story, our mutual friend, Maureen Werbach, was like, hey, do you want to self-publish? Here's what I did. And she sent me a very long, detailed, well-organized list of all the steps that she went through. It was like 28 steps. And I looked at it maybe 5 times. And every time I looked at it, I think my executive functioning, like, took a 20% hit. And I was just like, no, there's no way I can do this in sequential order or in any order and get this done. So I definitely relate to that. You need the grit. You need some like perseverance here, because I just don't know if I could do it. And maybe I could, but I really struggle with that stuff. So amazing that you were able to see that through. And I know for a lot of you listening, like, if you're interested in publishing, there are lots of guides and steps and people who will offer you support and strategy. And sometimes you can outsource some of this stuff. Like you said, the editing, the graphic design, some of the things that you don't know how to do, people are readily available to do that stuff. I just knew for me, when I was making the decision of like, do I want to try to get this traditionally published? Maureen's list was always on my mind as the driving force, because I was like, I am not going back to that fucking list and I'm never looking at that again.
I'm so glad she did not send me that. I think I would like reach out to her in different parts and she would send me like a couple of steps. And I was like, okay, good. Probably if she had sent me the whole list.
Yeah.
That might've been a non-starter.
Yeah. I copied it from like a text message, put it in my own personal Facebook message to myself, where I use it to like circle back to things, kept opening it, kept looking at it and being like, no, this is not good. I'm going to say that list actually prevented me from starting to write and process it for almost a month and a half, because I was so frozen in it.
Right. That's so funny. I know like our other mutual friend, Ajetta, I mean, she was just incredible in terms of like giving me a strategy of like, what's the goal of writing this book, right? It wasn't to sell like lots of books,
right?
But it was more like, I want to put something out there in the world. So I think being very clear about why you're publishing like helps me, because it's like, yeah, it's great that people are buying it, but it's more about like, you know, I ultimately would love teams to be like reading this together, book clubs, teachers. Absolutely. like how do we change organizations, how do we change companies, like so that everybody feels well taken care of.
And I, you know, knowing Ajetta pretty well, I just immediately think of the word impact. And that what you just described just sounds like impact, like having that impact, having that ability to ensure that people from different walks of life, people in different stages of life, people with different access to information can have this book readily available. And I love the idea of teamwork, because I've already been thinking before we started recording, I was like, I should buy 20 plus copies of this for my group practice, and we should use this book as a guide. So I'm definitely planning on doing that once we get off of here. So I think that's a really cool way to do that. And I know with a book too, like, you can turn this into a workbook, right? Like, if you want to do, you can turn that book into so much content for those of you listening. Like, it doesn't have to just stop with the book if that's not your goal. You can use that book for leveraging speaking opportunities. So there's a lot of ways that getting this voice out into the world is really useful for you and your platform and your message that you want to get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I just think about, for me, it's like I have like other jobs I love doing. And so I don't want to do as many anti-racism workshops as I once did. And plus, it's also, you know, burnout comes from doing, you know, workshops, particularly anti-racism workshops, 4 or 5 days a week. So like, this is a way where the work is still happening, but I'm not necessarily like doing all of that stuff anymore. And I can do other things that feed me and are more creative.
I love that. Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think almost everyone listening to this is probably looking for that because of the high rates of burnout in whatever you're doing, where you're like, I just need to focus on the things that really light me up. So it sounds like you have really found that. How has feedback been so far from like people who have used it for trainings or workshops or for book clubs or any of those things that have happened?
Yeah, it's been incredible. Like, so it's so... which sometimes I'm like, are you all just like saying good stuff? Like, who's gonna give me like some real feedback? But that's just the inner critic inside of me. It's been great. You know, people have passed it on to other people. And so it's really great to hear. I think the coolest thing is where in my Pilates class, like somebody had heard that I had wrote the book. And so she got the audiobook and she was like, oh my goodness. Like, it's amazing to just hear your voice and like, it's so soothing. And so I think it's been really helpful for people post-election to just think about like, how do I approach these conversations from a more grounded place? And how do we just keep doing the work and keep increasing our impact with other people? So I really appreciate people like using it in real time. That it's like actual skills to use and not just theoretical.
Yeah, I like that because that feels really tangible for people to immediately start incorporating and implementing. So if you found that middle ground like you were searching for, that sounds like a job well done for sure. And I can relate to the positive feedback thing and immediately thinking this can't be true because this all feels like too good to be true. I had like 40 people read my manuscript. They all gave positive feedback. I said, I can't trust these people. This is not real. And then I sent it to a friend who does editing. She's like, no, it's really good. Why aren't you trusting this? I don't know. I still won't trust it when it comes out. I don't know. It's got to work through me.
I'm looking forward to reading yours.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming on and just being really open and vulnerable about everything. And congrats on publishing. It sounds like a really awesome resource. And for those of you watching, you can see it over the corner of Natalie's shoulder, what the cover art looks like, but you can share with the audience where they can find it so that they can purchase it too. And we'll put that in the show notes for everyone who's listening.
Yeah. So the book is called Mindful Race Talk, Building Literacy, Fluency, and Agility. And you can find it on Amazon and it's available in paperback, ebook, and Audible.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on and making the time today. And we will get all of those links and all of that information into the show notes so you have easy access to Dr. Edmond's new book. Congrats on that. And I really appreciate you making the time.
Thanks. Thanks so much for the conversation.
You're welcome. And to everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, new episodes are out on Saturdays on all major platforms and YouTube. You can like, download, subscribe, and share. Doubt yourself. Do it anyway. We'll see you next week.